Welcome to the Break Your Bullshit Box podcast, where excuses aren't tolerated and results are earned through authenticity, vulnerability, and a commitment to excellence. My name is Amber Furman, success architect, attorney, and NLP trainer. If you're ready to bitch slap the bully in your brain, overcome the bullshit that holds you back, and design the life and success you've always wanted, then it's time for you to break your bullshit box and step into designing life and success on your terms. Welcome back to another episode of the Break Your Bullshit Box podcast. Today, I have the amazing Gabrielle Pimstone with me. Gabrielle Pimstone has worked in corporate psychology for 27 years, but a chance podcast encounter altered the course of her life. She's now an energy coach, helping those feeling burnt out and stuck. She teaches powerful energy techniques for self-healing and navigating major life transitions so that people can live with renewed purpose and passion. We dug into some really incredible topics during this interview. Particularly, we talked so much about the way that we've been programmed to expect certain things from the people around us, from relationships, the importance of our self-talk, the ability to overcome our excuses. We really dug into the cross between psychology and energy in Gabrielle's work, and I really enjoyed this conversation with her. Before we jump into this interview, I want to remind you that the Break Your Bullshit Box Academy is open and ready for enrollment. This academy is for anybody who is ready to finally break out of their bullshit box or learn that they have one. So often, we have never been asked to communicate with our excuses. We've never been asked to step into and listen to what it is we tell ourselves. And if you allow yourself to hear what it is you say, you will find that there's evidence that supports an alternative life for you, alternative capabilities. For everything that you've told yourself you can't do in your life, there is evidence of you accomplishing something similar to that. And all we have to do is find it. So the Break Your Bullshit Box Academy is designed to help you understand what goes on in your head, help you understand what it is you say to yourself, how to overcome that, and then give you practical tools to be able to create a different future for yourself so that you can finally have the life that you want. If this sounds like a conversation that you want to have, head over to academy.successdevelopmentsolutions.com and get all the information on the academy there before it closes. Without further ado, let's jump into this conversation with Gabrielle. Gabrielle, thank you so much for coming on the show with me. I really appreciate your time today.
It's wonderful to be here, and I'm really looking forward to talking to you and your audience.
Thank you. Me as well. So they just heard a little bit about you in the intro. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about like what an energy coach is? I feel like that term coach gets thrown around so much and means something different to every single person. So what does it mean to you, and what does that entail?
It's great. It does. It means a lot of different things. For me, the term coach entails holding a space for people, a safe space for people to explore themselves, but it's also more directional than that. I have a methodology, I have tools, and I teach people how to do it for themselves. So there's very much, it's driven by the desire and the commitment to help clients help themselves rather than doing it for them. So the coach, so there's a safe holding space for exploration, but they're also very practical methods and tools and techniques that we learn that allow people to step away and heal themselves and do what's necessary on an ongoing basis in their lives.
So I love that.
Yeah, that's the coaching part. The energy coaching part is a different thing entirely. I'm actually I'm a leadership coach. So I've, you know, with my corporate career, that's, I'm accredited in that, values-based leadership. But an energy, the way that I've defined my energy coaching is that I teach people how to master their energy. And we do that through by looking at five components of it. How do they understand their energy so they know what triggers them, for example? How do they protect their energy from toxicity around them? How do they clear their energy? Because we all walk around with energy blocks. What does that look like? How do they work with their energy to clear it? How do they maintain their energy? Because we dip all the time. And then how do they optimize their energy? Which is, we've got latent, dormant gifts and talents that very few of us access. For example, intuition is one. The ability to work with our dreams is another. How do we activate those so that people can really expand and continue the healing journey over time? So it's those five components.
That's super intriguing. I know that you indicated that you have a background in psychology. What made you decide that this was the right path for you?
Well, I grew up when I was growing up, I've always had a real interest in the human psyche, which is the psychology part, but also the human spirit, which is the spiritual part. And when I was young, I started delving into the kind of psycho-spiritual stuff at a very young age. I mean, from the age of 7, 8 years old, I was writing down some pretty intense dreams. I remember my first dream. I woke up out of it when I was 8 years old, and I was terrified. It was a scary dream for me. I still remember it. And I kind of braced, I leant into the fear, and I wrote about it. And I didn't actually work out what it meant, but it started a process of working with dreams. And then when my father passed away afterwards, I had a chat with my mom, and I said to her, I want to go and speak to a medium. I think I was 10 at that age. And she said, no. And so I moved into the field of psychology, knowing myself, helping others know themselves. I loved that. And then in 2020, I hit my own inflection point, my own crisis. And the psychological techniques that I'd been using all these years no longer worked. So I was kind of forced to pivot. And the spiritual avenue that had always been available to me but was untapped, I opened it up. And that's kind of, so that's how I went into energy mastery. But to be honest, the way that I work, I can't shed my psychology background. And I think it enriches the coaching conversation, because you really need to be able to facilitate a conversation, a dialogue. You need to be able to probe people, go back really far into their childhood, sometimes before their childhood, before this life started. And the psychology background is really helpful to get people to understand what trips them up.
Yeah, I am entirely fascinated by that. And I have so many questions for you along your journey. The first really comes into the psychology and the energy side of things. One is very scientific and one isn't. And it's becoming more scientific with conversations about quantum linguistics and things to that effect. But one can be touched and understood and scientifically proven, and the other is unexplainable. And those two things don't normally go together. And so for you, did you find yourself being pulled in different directions with the professional standards of psychology and your love for energy?
Not at all. I mean, they're different disciplines, but they meld and they mesh beautifully together. So in terms of proving energy, it's a difficult one. But I often think back on, we've got all these ancient medical techniques, like, ancient Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic. They haven't gone through clinical trials but they've endured over thousands of years, because it's more of a lived experience of them. It's what you'd call clinical observation. You see lives change as a result of them, but then you're not getting the feedback from a laboratory. You're getting it from somebody's experience. I think that energy work is very much along those lines as well. And by the way, psychology, you can't really prove either. I mean, you know, how do you, it's a little bit more scientific, but it's also, you know, and it started off as it's this invisible discipline. You go into your mind, you work out your, you know, you're going to your unconscious, and you know, how do you measure that? You measure it through the person's actual lived change in their life, that you can start, they start to feel better initially, and then they start to relate better, and their life start, they start attracting different things into their lives. So it's very much more of a felt and experiential thing that a lot of people are drawn to, because traditional methods, they've kind of outgrown them. I think we're ascending and people are looking for different ways of actualizing.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. I think that we as a society are looking for alternative options. And, you know, from the non-medical side of it, from like the layperson's thought, it always seems like we've become more medicated as a society and more reliant on non-natural ways to heal. And so I think you're right that especially in the last 5 to 10 years, we've really wanted to find something that's more human, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Yes, very much so. Look, I come from a long line of doctors, medical doctors, and I'm not anti-medicine. I think there's absolute, so I just want to be clear that I think there's definitely a role for that. But what this does is it's different. It's it is a way of getting, it's actually really an effective process if you're wanting to change your life. It's linked more to human transformation. How do you embody a different energetic state so that you can feel less stressed? So that, and that leads to, you know, relating differently to people, to yourself and to people. How do you come from a peaceful place rather than, oh, I'm at war with the world? And it's really, its applicability is less, or I use it less around physical ailments, although one can use it for that, but more around how people can navigate a change in their life, how they can step into the best version of themselves, how they can feel better, and how they can enhance the quality of their life. That's really the way that I use it. So I'm starting to bring it in instead of traditional psychological techniques. That's how
And I'll second what you said, that, you know, in everything that we do, although I don't have the traditional psychology background, I have been involved in the NLP side of things for the last 4 or 5 years, and I love that world. And I'm very much not anti medicine either, and I'm not a doctor, so who am I to be? As a person that's experienced it, what I'm anti is medicine as the first response, right?
And over medication. I think that's an epidemic. There's like, and especially people with psychiatric problems and such, psychiatric challenges are often over medicated, which numbs them, and that means that they can't actually work on their stuff. They've plateauing, but they're not in, there isn't enough impetus for them to actually do the real work and shift things. So it's more, for me, it's yes, it's going there and only going there. So I think medicine coupled with other modalities is incredibly powerful. And, you know, I've worked with people who've reduced their medicine as a result of shifting their energetic state.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I'm seeing now, the trends that I'm seeing now that I think is incredibly dangerous, I'd love your opinion on it from a actual psychological background with your history. You know, we talk often in this world about, and by this world, I mean like the energetic and mindset space, we talk about how important your words are and how important the labels that you choose to take on are. And through all of social media, I'm seeing ADHD be
worn as a badge of honor by so many people. There's so many different conversations out there about, oh, I just can't focus because I have ADHD, and there's like apparel being made because of it. And I'm from the NLP side of things, and I'm interested in hearing your psychological side of things. I'm very concerned about what's going to happen when people continually tell themselves, I am this, I am this, I am this, and then create that outcome for themselves. Where do you see that going, and should we be concerned about that?
We should be very concerned about it. And I actually work with language a lot in my practice, because it's one way that you can access energy is through the words you say. Mm-hmm. And the words you say create an energetic state. And so I think it's really important. You know, I have, I am, all of that taps into identity. And when you have a fixed identity, you start to believe it. It's difficult to shift that. That's when things become, that's where, you know, changing your life becomes difficult, because you've got to untangle identity. But I work with language all the time. I actually, just a personal anecdote, I caught myself a while ago. I talk a lot to myself, by the way.
I love that. You're my people.
And I heard myself saying, I'm exhausted, as I got up out of bed. And I realized that I say that word all the time. I am exhausted. This is exhausting. And I realized that I was stuck in that language. And the impact of that language was profound for me, because I felt flat a lot of the time, you know. And so I help people tap into their habitual language and reframe it, because for two reasons, you can get into their energetic state that way, but they can also shift their energetic state by using language. So, for example, if, you know, I am exhausted is your go-to phrase, you can say, I'd love some more sleep if it's physical, or I've got a lot on my plate, but I'm ready to tackle it. Some, you know, I'm just thinking off the cuff, but you'll find something that you can reframe it. It's got to feel authentic. And then once you find the right words and you reprogram your language, it actually has a very powerful impact on your energy and what you can tackle.
I love that you mentioned this, and I love even more that you mentioned that whatever you tell yourself instead of I'm exhausted has to be authentic, because this, I'm a huge anti fake it till you make it proponent.
Me too. Right. Me too, Amber.
I don't like the language. I don't like the words. And it's interesting, because when I train and speak, I tell people that and the way that traditional affirmations are taught, I don't think that those work either. And I think the reason for it is because when you stand in front of a mirror and you say something that you don't believe, that you're not authentic with, the only thing that you're teaching yourself is that you can't be trusted, right? The only thing that you're teaching yourself is that you're not being honest about where you're at and what you're doing. And I think there are ways to make affirmations very powerful, and there are ways to acknowledge that we don't have it all together, and yet we can still be helpful to people without feeling fake. And so I'm curious what some tips and tricks that you have are to be able to combat the fake it till you make it, and also make progress at the same time.
I can easily talk about my own experience when it comes to that, because I'm 100% with you. You know, I'm all about authenticity. You know, there's only one of you. You may as well be yourself. So what I did with regards to affirmations, because initially I thought I can't do affirmations. I just, it's not me. It's fake. And then it happened organically, because I had been working on myself for so long. I realized that I've got this treasure trove of aha moments that I've had, lessons that I've integrated that matter to me. And I spent some time a few years ago writing them up, and I've got like a card deck of about 100 affirmations that are lessons that I've integrated. So when I read them, there's an energetic resonance to them. And I play a game. I haven't done this for a little while, but there are times where I go to that deck and I just pull out a card, and that becomes my affirmation for the day. And that's where I focus and direct my energy for the day. And it's a wonderful, and it's very authentic because these are my personal lessons. So yeah. That would be a tip, you know, to codify your aha moments into your affirmations.
Yeah, I love that so much, because when we really step back and listen to what it is we're saying, there's so much evidence in our lives that contradicts the excuses that we believe, right? And when we're stuck in our shit, you just can't see them, right?
Yeah.
And so if you had that list, you know, I'll share an experience recently where I had been around somebody that was constantly being told how great they were at their job and how, and we do something very similar. And there was a part of me that was like, hey, like my little internal child was screaming. And I was like, what about me? What about me? I'm good at my job too, right? And I mentioned to somebody that like, I don't like feeling jealous. And there was this jealousy aspect popping up. And I wanted to figure out where that was coming from because I didn't like the feelings of it. And she says, well, what's making you jealous? And I said, well, people are looking at this person and saying how great she is. And I feel left out. And she pointed out 7, 8, or 9 instances where she had been in a room of somebody saying the same thing to me. But when we want to believe our bullshit, we don't remember those 7 or 8 or 9 moments. We only remember the times that it didn't happen in our head. Yeah. And so I love the idea of making the card deck of all the things that can remind us of the good that's happened. That I've never heard that before. I like that approach.
And the progress we've made. And, you know, those aha moments, they're part of your energetic field now. You've embodied them. You've learned the lesson. And it's just a lovely reminder if you're having a day where you need a bit of a pick-me-up that you've got it within you.
Yeah.
To fix yourself. You've got it within you. All the answers lie within us. And yeah. So that's why I do it, because they all of those are my answers. If I showed you that card deck, they'd probably have very little resonance for you. Like, but for me, the 6 words on the card are so profound, and they have the capacity to shift my being and my experience.
Yeah, it would be really nice if we could just go out and buy a whole new identity with somebody else's card deck, right? Unfortunately, exactly. It's... getting the card deck is more painful than just paying for it, right?
That's true.
And it's worth it. It's worth it. So,
well, it's interesting you say that, because I think one of the barriers to change and to really healing is the notion that it's painful. And I got a different view, I think, if I can break the bullshit, about, you know, I worked in the corporate world for 27 years and in the field of change and transformation. And everyone says, oh, we resist change. But I actually think we've all got it within us. We want to change. We want to be the best versions of ourselves. We actually want to grow. We are hardwired for learning, improvement, regeneration, all of those beautiful things. What we need to do is to access that will. And that's part of the work that I do, is getting people into a non-resistant energetic state before they can make the changes, is to access the desire, the will, and the joy in learning, in growth.
Yeah, I love that you put it that way. And you know, the word painful for me isn't necessarily a negative connotation, which is another thing that I think is so interesting that we could dig into, which is the fact that, you know, one of the biggest disservices that we have in our language is a dictionary, because it assumes that you define words the same way that I do and that somebody else does. And the reality is we don't. In communication, we never really know what we're saying until we know how the other person defines everything, right?
Yes.
And for me, your choose your pain. I agree with you that it would be great to just be able to sit all comfy and have life turn out the way that we want it to. And unfortunately, we're required to make a choice, either the pain of where we're sitting or the pain of transformation. And the pain of transformation is almost always less severe than the pain of where we're sitting. It just requires us to take a chance.
I'm so glad you said that, because that is absolutely my philosophy. You know, one of the biggest barriers to healing and change is getting off the starting blocks and the fear of getting off the starting blocks. And that's why so many of us, myself included, wait for crises to hit before we pushed off the starting block. I mean, in my own life, it was 2020. I was in this job that I absolutely just breaking me. I wasn't sleeping. My thyroid problems had come back. And why did it have to get there? Right. And so I think, we absolutely have, we need a catalyst in our lives, but the fear is often worse. Actually, it got to my point, the fear of staying put overrided the fear of shifting my life. And it's like that for many people.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because when people ask me why I chose to leave the legal field to become a coach, and my answer is I didn't. Like, I just chose not to be in panic anymore. I mean, I had tied my definition of success to this external result. And when it happened, my brain didn't know how to respond to that, because like this, I had done everything that I was supposed to do to make the pain and the trauma go away. And I know that so many people can relate to this. And so when I hit what I call my I'll be happy moment, which was a law degree and a six-figure income, 3 months after I hit that moment, I started having panic attacks, because where was I supposed to go from there? Like, life was supposed to be good by now. So for anybody that's sitting in that, I know for me, it required a ton of therapy, a ton of putting myself in situations I had never been in before, and then finding a new career through my healing. I healed and wanted to help others know there were options as well. If somebody's sitting there thinking, this is a great conversation, it worked for the two of them, but they don't know me, it won't work for me, what do you have to say to those people?
That is such a difficult one, because I mean, my whole practice is built on what has worked for me. It's not theoretical as much as it is experiential. I mean, what's the discomfort? Why are you listening to this podcast? Why are you contemplating healing? Something mustn't be working in your life. And, what's keeping you stuck? And it's a really simple, this is a coaching conversation. It's a simple thing. Where are you now? Where do you want to be? And what's getting in the way of that? And I think, most people would be able to answer that and really lean into that conversation, because we've all got aspirations that haven't been met, and we've all got patterns that keep us stuck. And so I think I would probably go down that route with them.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
I love that you said that too, because my friends and I often talk about how some days committing to a growth mindset can be so intimidating. And there have been times where I've picked up the phone and called my friends and been like, there are days that I wish I could go back to the time where I didn't know that I was in control of my future, where I could just sit back and think somebody else was driving the wheel. And for anybody who's religious or believes in universe, I'm not saying there's not something bigger than us that has a plan. What I am saying is that so many people sit back and think, well, my life is laid out for me and I don't have any control about where I go. And I was one of those people for so long. And there are times where I'll sit back and say, God, some days I just wish I could go back to when I didn't know that my discomfort is because of my choices, and that my comfort will also be because of my choices. And then I realize exactly what you just said. I wanted to change that life because it wasn't working. So wishing I could go back to it serves absolutely no purpose other than to keep me from accomplishing the potential I'm meant to accomplish. And exactly. I feel like people that are listening to this podcast keep bouncing back and forth between, I could do so much more, I'm not happy here.
Yes. And they're probably bouncing back and forth because they haven't worked out what their compelling future is. So there are two sides to this. There's like dissatisfaction with your current life, but you've also got to have something better to go to. And if you haven't worked that out, you're going to stay put.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So this is the Break Your Bullshit Box podcast. We talk about all things excuses and all things growth. And so for you, what are some of the things that you believed for so long that turned out to not be true? What are the excuses that you had to pull out of your proverbial bullshit box in order to create the life that you have now?
I'm going to get really personal here and talk about a deeply held story and belief that I had that stopped me from stepping out of my invisible prison, my spiritual prison. I had a belief that if I wasn't struggling, I was complacent. And if I was complacent, I'd get punished. The rug would get pulled out from underneath me. So I resisted feeling happier. I resisted stepping into a better version of myself because I thought it would all be taken away from me. And so that was a belief that I had to work incredibly long and hard to shed until I found energy work, and then it became a lot easier because I was able to shift the dynamic a lot quicker. But that was my biggest, I mean, it sounds crazy. Every time I talk about this, it sounds so bizarre, but that was a biggest lot of bullshit because the universe wants you. We are expected to thrive. That's the goal. The goal is to eliminate suffering. And so a lot of it is self-imposed. And that was my self-imposed belief.
Yeah, I can completely relate to that. I mean, I think as people who were raised in our generation, and I can only imagine it would be similar across the pond where you are at, it's not just an American belief, is that anything worth having is worth working for. And that leads this belief that if you don't have to work for it, then it's not worth having, right? And so I went down that path as well of like having to make my life difficult, because if it wasn't hard to achieve, then it wasn't worth having. And it's interesting because when I was in the middle of my breakdown and working to breathe again, I found obstacle course racing, maybe one of the most difficult things that are out there, because I loved how much my muscles hurt when I was done. I loved how much effort I had to put into being successful at it. And my mom would say to me, why don't you just go like do yoga or something? I'd be like, yoga doesn't work. I don't even sweat when I do it. Right? Like it was even in my physical life that it had to be hard.
I think you and I had a similar syndrome.
Yeah.
And for me, so yours was, mine was so unconscious that I was in a pattern of sabotaging, of self-sabotage, where good things would happen and I'd smash them over time. You know, I'd make sure they didn't, like I'd be the one in control. I'd be the one in control of pulling the rug out from under my feet. So many people. And when I started talking about the syndrome that you and I, you know, you've got to work hard or life's got to be hard. It is such a common belief. And I want to just say to whoever's listening to this, like, if I can break out of it, you can.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And I have this conversation often, especially in relation to my romantic life and anybody else's as well. I have a friend who's a huge Disney fan. I'm not anti-Disney. I just don't like, I've only been to Disneyland once. I'm not a huge Disney person. And she also loves Hallmark. And the more that I grew, the more that I started to look at the patterns that exist in all of pop culture, because it's got to be entertaining, right? And what makes something entertaining? The climax and the struggle and then the overcoming and the reward. And we've created this unrealistic expectation of what healthy relationships look like and feel like. We've created this belief that there has to be a struggle and you had to have lost something and then you've got to work to get it back and, yes. and you've got to struggle over choices. And I know in my life, it's created situations where you meet somebody and the relationship is smooth and you wonder what's wrong with it, because it can't be good if it doesn't have the climax, right? And I think that flows through all of our life. So I think it's so important for us to look back and say, like, what have we been programmed by through pop culture? What has your experience been with things like that?
Well, I think whatever I'm saying absolutely related to how I was in relationships as well. But it's interesting for me, in relationships felt like this holy grail. Because, you know, you watch Hollywood movies and it's like divine timing and they went through so much and they broke up and then they got back and they were finally lived happily ever after. Actually, romantic relationships, I have found now, are less about that than they are about meeting someone who's willing to do the work with you on this journey. It's not this magical kind of, oh, you know, it's actually just a very fluid, normal and natural and organic part of being human. And the same goes for friendships as well. Mm-hmm. You know, clicking with people generally, that it's that, you know, the best friendships are the ones where you can be your authentic self as well, and where you can have discourse and have and disagree and still love each other through it. And so I think it's more of a being able to, it's less about these wondrous moments of meeting than they are about, you know, somebody realizing that somebody's there for you and you're there for them and you're committed to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I grew up in a very, very religious environment and a belief, both religiously and societally, that marriages were supposed to be forever and relationships are supposed to be forever. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't be. I think that there's so much shame attached to a relationship not working because we believe that marriages are supposed to be forever. And I was talking to a friend of mine that's deep inside of a church. And we were talking about how having a relationship last forever actually requires you to fall in love with a different person over and over and over and over again, because you're not the same person throughout your life. So I love that you said that more than the feeling or the connection is having the people in your life who are willing to dig in and do the work, because those are the people that stick around.
Those are the people that stick around. They really are. Just that whole idea of shame. Dr. Shivali, she's wonderful. I listened to one of her podcasts, or bought one of her audiobooks, I think, a while ago. And she says, this is about relationships, society values longevity. Mm. No one cares about the quality of the relationship. They just care how long you've been together with the person. Yeah. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, we're fighting societal values all the time, you know, stigmas around being a single parent, stigmas, you know, all those kinds of things. We've progressed so much as a species, but, you know, the majority still says yes. My therapist used to say society says yes to right-handed heterosexual married couples, you know, and so society still says yes to that. And it's a lot easier to navigate through life if you're straight, if you're coupled, you know, all of those things, because things are made a lot easier for you. But part of, and this is, I define success as authenticity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going back to Dr. Shivali's statement about relationships, it's not about the longevity of your relationships, about the quality of your relationships. And the quality is determined by your ability to be authentic and your ability to go places with the other person and still feel like the relationship is intact.
I feel like that same statement applies so much to careers too. You know, we are coming out of a generation where they would work for the same place for 40 years and retire and get their 401k. And now you know, you're seeing people that change jobs every 2 to 3 years because the relationship isn't working. I was having a conversation with somebody recently where they said, I'm worried about changing jobs because then it'll only show my work history for a year. And my response to her was, an employer that you want to work with won't care because they'll be able to have conversations with you about the purpose of leaving. And as somebody who hires often, I would rather work with somebody who's willing to say this isn't working and do something different than somebody who feels the need to stay in a place where they don't feel fulfilled or beneficial just because they want the longevity.
And I'd add to that, because I mean, that was my story, by the way. And when I talk about relationships, yes, relationships across the board, that, you know, people aren't just staying in relationships or jobs that aren't fulfilling them. They're staying in jobs and careers and relationships that are making them deeply anxious, you know. So there's actual trauma. And I was one of those people, you know. I had this moment where I woke up on a Sunday morning and I had this gigantic pit in my stomach. I was in a job that was just, you know, it was traumatizing me. And so a lot of people, it's not just that it's, you're not fulfilled. Sometimes it can actually start impeding and in your actual everyday life, your health and your well-being.
Yeah. And, you know, everybody, well, I won't say everybody, that's an unfair statement. A lot of people, when you ask them what they value about a relationship. Now, for anybody who's listening, this also applies to yourself. So when I make this statement, keep this in mind for your self-relationship. People say that they value a relationship with open communication, both personally, professionally, and self. And I think they think that they do until they realize that a relationship that has open communication requires you to be the most vulnerable that you will ever be in your life and hear things from somebody else's point of view. And it is necessary for long-lasting, healthy relationships. And it is also incredibly vulnerable. So from a relationship of all kinds standpoint, what tips do you have when people feel that defense shield popping up when they're getting the feedback from the open communication that they asked for?
I mean, you got to dig in, and some of it is your stuff and some of it is the way it's being delivered, because it's a skill and the person delivering it to you might be doing it incorrectly. So, you know, but let's just say the person's following all the rules and you're feeling this defensiveness. I mean, it is very hard. What I would do and what I have done and what I, you know, when I was in the corporate, we did this a lot, is to actually, if say you're giving me feedback and I'm feeling, starting to shut down, feeling defensive, part of the conversation then is about, I'm finding this moment really difficult. And here's why. I'm listening to you. I'm still in the conversation, but I'm struggling to take on board the feedback for this reason, that reason, or because it's just, it's difficult hearing how I'm perceived by you. I'm feeling a sense of shame. That's an authentic conversation. And so when you're feeling that wall go up, talk about it. Tell the other person how you're feeling. Tell them that you're still committed in the conversation, but just noting that I'm just noticing that I'm feeling like I'm struggling with this. And then that opens up a human moment where the person can come in and say whatever it is, they can respond to it. And then you know, that's how you make progress.
Yeah. And I love that you said it's a skill, because it really is a skill to be able to communicate in an open relationship conversation well. And even those of us that are trained to do it well, we're still human. And sometimes we're so emotionally passionate that we don't take time to bring ourselves down to execute that skill well. So you said two things in that answer that I want to point out to the people who are listening. First, where you said, it's hard for me to hear that I'm perceived that way by you. I think so many people hear something and they say, that must be the way that I am. And if you lined up 20 people and you asked them who you were, you're going to get 20 different answers. And so understanding that somebody's opinion of us is just their perception is so incredibly important, in and respecting their perception, if we value that relationship, is equally as important.
Yes, exactly. I think the other thing I want to say for people delivering feedback, and this is why self-talk is so important, going back to NLP and language, is the quality of your feedback is actually the quality of your self-talk. How you talk to yourself gets conveyed in how you talk to other people. If you've got a loving self-dialogue, it's much easier for you to come from a place of love and compassion when you're delivering a difficult message to somebody. Difficult feedback.
I have never heard it said quite like that before. And I love that. You know, we talk about perception as projection in NLP a lot, that the way that you feel about yourself is what you project out onto the world. And so I've lived in that world for a little while. And I've never thought of it. The reason I'm sitting in this for a minute is because I get called intimidating often. I'm an attorney. I'm successful. I'm not mild in most areas of my life. And my self-talk historically has not been great until I found this journey. And I think we're onions, right? And so we're constantly finding new levels of places that we have beaten ourselves up. Yeah. And, you know, in one of our trainings, I love this conversation. In one of our trainings, somebody said, I was so excited to be paired with Amber as an evaluator for my training because I had heard all the stories about who she was. And I was really excited that somebody was going to beat me down the same way that I did. And then she didn't. And I didn't know how to handle that. And so the self-talk not only affects the way that we deliver feedback, but it also affects what we expect to hear from others.
How we receive feedback.
When somebody doesn't meet that.
Yeah.
It causes us to step back and say, wait a minute, why are they being nice to me? Because I wouldn't be nice to me right now.
Exactly, Amber. Exactly.
Exactly. I love it. I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. If people want to continue talking to you about this, if they've resonated with something that you've said and they want to follow up, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Best way is on Instagram, because I'm very active. I'm DMing all the time, Gabrielle.Pinstone, and I'll be very responsive there. I'm on the other side of the world, so I might be sleeping when you message me, but I check it and I respond as soon as I can.
I love it. Gabrielle, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was fantastic to get to connect with you. And I am always a fan of when I see people combine the psychology and the energy side of things and create a softer and more effective approach to human behavior.
Thank you. Thank you. I found it to be very, the more you combine modalities, the more powerful it is. So I agree with that. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much.